Welcome to the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast, a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus.
Hello and welcome, all fantasy fiends, to the latest installation, episode 14 of the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast. Fantasy basketball coming at you. A little bit of more dynasty talk today. We're excited about it. I'm excited about it. Who am I? Tony Papadopoulos. Thank you for asking. At @whose_your_papa on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my two esteemed colleagues. The duo to the trio of this Three Musketeers group that we have for your fantasy basketball listening. Rhett Bauer, talk to me, my man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Still recovering from Thanksgiving, but we're hanging in there.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Kevin So, the master of the Fantasy Unicorns, the head honcho. My man, how's it going?
It's going great. Getting over a little sickness, but hanging in there and definitely excited to talk some fantasy tonight.
Extra pounds from Thanksgiving, some sniffles, and we're ready to talk fantasy basketball. I'm excited about it, as I know you both are. Diving in, we've had an interesting couple of weeks here in the association, a lot going on. Let's dive right into the week in review. First off, I feel like we can't talk about the last couple weeks in the NBA without talking about James Harden. He's just been so impactful. He had a huge game against the Hawks, putting up 60 points in three quarters. It's honestly kind of shocking. Last week, he averaged 47 points on 33 minutes a game, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, 8 threes. Shocking stuff. It's just he's been absolutely dominating. Kevin, I mean, what are you taking away here from Harden's domination? I mean, what's the main takeaway here? I mean, he's obviously proving to be the most dangerous scorer in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has proven that he's pretty much the best scorer, I don't know, since Jordan at this point. Like, I would put him over Kobe as a scorer.
Wow.
And I think he's just got too many offensive skills. He's too strong of a player as a guard, too. I mean, people just cannot guard him. I know everyone people always make fun of him drawing fouls and stuff, and it does get a little silly on that end. But, I mean, he's like Shaq, where it's just like it's hard for the refs to kind of, referee him appropriately most of the time. And, he's just kind of an amazing offensive player that we're kind of pretty lucky to be able to witness. And I think everyone that was kind of worried about what Westbrook was going to take away from his production, obviously that was kind of unwarranted. And, if you picked him in your fantasy draft in the top, I think generally he was going in the top 3 or 4, you're probably feeling pretty good about your choice at that point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that for us in our roundtable discussion, a lot of people had them in the top 3 of their sort of redraft top 10. He's been impressive. I really like the analogy you made to Shaq, because you're right. I mean, foul calls in the NBA are so subjective, where on a certain level, you could say you could call a foul on every single play with James Harden, or you could not call a foul on every single play, and you could kind of argue both sides.
Totally.
So it's definitely been an interesting progression with him. Rhett, what are your thoughts on James Harden's really fantastic scoring output over the last couple weeks?
So I absolutely hate the way James Harden plays the refs, because it seems like half the time he's not even playing basketball. But what he's been doing this last week, and really the entire season, because Westbrook, it has just been quite disappointing. Harden's been carrying the Rockets, and he's been playing incredible. But I disagree with your analogy about him being like Shaq, because Shaq was actually getting fouled because he was just that dominant and that physical, whereas Harden seeks out that contact. So it's kind of gimmicky on that. But I don't know if you guys saw yesterday when Harden, they were playing San Antonio and they blew a 20-point lead. And the guy, the heckler in the crowd talking about Harden, we don't want to see a free throw shooting contest. And Harden yelled back at him saying he doesn't want to see a bunch of fouls. I don't know if you guys saw that. But, yeah,
Harden's ridiculous. Man, there's so much to talk about.
And there was that,
the dunk that wasn't.
The dunk, yeah.
Yeah,
the dunk that wasn't. Let me just say that overall, across all sports that I watch, particularly this time of year where it's football and basketball, the officiating it's abysmal. I mean, it's laughable, really. This whole reviewing bullshit is just it's beyond frustrating. The games have gotten longer for no real reason, and these refs aren't even making the right call after they're reviewing it. There was the LeBron situation last week where he was very disappointed with the officiating, and where he knew that they weren't going to overturn their own call because they're the ones making the decision and they can't be objective about that. And in this case, they couldn't even review this play because the rules in the NBA say that you can't review a made basket. Like there are very sort of arbitrary rules about what can be reviewed and what cannot be challenged. But they had ample time now to rectify it in the game, and they didn't. They didn't fix it, even though they definitely could have and should have. And the game ended up in overtime. You could argue that the Rockets should not have lost that game, right? Of course, they let the Spurs back in, but what's the psychological impact of having essentially 2 points on a breakaway dunk be wiped off the board, where it's a moment when the momentum should be shifting your way when you're 15 points up in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes left, but now all of a sudden, those points don't count because the refs are essentially idiots. And, oh, shit, it's overtime. It's double overtime. We lose the game.
Maybe that's what LeBron meant when he said 2 points isn't 2 points. I'll explain later.
No, it's true. I mean, there's way more to it.
Doesn't count.
Than that. It's momentum. It's momentum. And there is a difference between a steal and a dunk than, a layup on a half court, like there's a difference. There's a momentum difference that changes. And psychologically, for a player like James Harden, where he's so much about how much he scores. Anyway, as a basketball fan, I don't love James Harden. I don't love the Rockets, but as a basketball fan, it's really depressing and really, really upsetting to see. The NBA needs to do something about it.
Yep.
Anyway, I wanted to rant on that for a minute, so apologies. I told everybody beforehand. I said I'm going to rant on this for a minute, but it is. It's important to talk about as fans. If anyone is listening, whatever. I think that we all need to be upset about it. To talk about some more lighthearted news, some more fun news. Carmelo Anthony, our player of the week last week, to everybody's surprise, putting up some serious numbers. He's been putting up 20-point games recently. Operating in his mellow way, pinch post, short corner. Kevin, what have you seen from Melo, and what does this mean from a fantasy impact with regard to the very confusing Portland front court?
Yeah, Carmelo's been definitely better than I expected. I'm looking at his stats right now, and he's averaging 16.4 points, 1.4 threes, 6 boards, 2 assists on 44% and 85%. And, that's definitely more than I thought he was going to be doing. He's been averaging in 7 games, just over 30 minutes a game. So he's definitely carved out a pretty big role so far in that Portland front court. It's funny because one of my friends who's not a very experienced fantasy basketball GM kind of asked me about Melo when he was coming back. And he's in a 12-team league, and he was like, How much money should I put in for waivers? I was like, don't even bother. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I was like, just leave it alone. I probably would have said the same thing.
and now he's kind of like, I thought you knew what you were talking about. But either way, even with all the hype and the player of the – it was player of the month. Is that what he got?
Player of the week.
Player of the week. Okay, good. Yeah. Player of the week. Yeah. He's still barely hanging on to standard league relevance. He's what I'm looking at is I see him ranked 136th overall. So even with sort of all of the news and kind of the surprise and the solid scoring and you know, 3-point shooting, overall, he's still not really a needle mover for your fantasy leagues. Unless you're in really deep leagues, if it's a 30 team league, he's definitely was a good pickup. But
take a shot.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he couldn't. He could improve. He's very well rested, obviously, he could pick it up a little bit more too. But he's still always going to be kind of just a scorer, maybe a 3-point guy, get some solid boards, but I wouldn't expect much else. And so it's more of a just kind of a good story as opposed to sort of a very fantasy relevant story.
Rhett, over to you. What are your thoughts on Melo's resurgence?
I also said that Melo would be not useless because I figured he would come in and he would do what Melo does and score. And that's exactly what he's been doing. And I saw somebody on Twitter that was like, oh, when Melo shoots above 50%, they're 3-0, but they're 0-4 in games where he doesn't. It's like, yes, that's true, but they also played Chicago for two of those three games where he shot over 50%. So that
good point.
Doesn't really mean a whole lot to me. Melo, I think the real story here is mostly about Portland. Like you guys said, their front court. I mean, we saw it a little bit when Whiteside went down because Collins is already out with the shoulder. They don't have any other options at the four or the five. Like, he's essentially a stretch five at this point sometimes because he's not really fast enough to guard fours. And I mean, that he's providing the scoring that Portland kind of needs, that little bit of a burst that hopefully saves them from a lost season, because it's not looking good. It's not looking good at all.
I'm going to ask this question to both of you just real quick. What are your thoughts on Nasir Little as a potential? Because it looks like Melo and Little in the wake of Zach Collins' injury, looks like they are the ones who've been soaking up most of those power forward slash, sort of big forward minutes, small forward minutes. I mean, Kevin, you're well on the record as a Nas hater. What's your outlook on, obviously he's not super relevant in your standard leagues, but in your 16, 20, 30 team leagues, I think you could be considering, especially from a dynasty standpoint, you should be looking at Nasir Little. Isn't that right?
Yeah. He's for dynasty leagues, especially deeper ones, he's definitely somebody that you either have on your radar or you should just be scooping up, especially if it's like a 30 team league.
In my case, you drafted him, but
Right. And actually I did in another league as well. At the end of the first round, you kind of just take your swings on guys. And he's a guy who, obviously had a very nice, a lot of hype coming out of high school and then didn't really live up to it in college. And
the Cam Reddish trajectory.
So the potential is obviously there. And so, you want to take your chances with players that have shown that type of potential in the past. And, he's a big guy. Like he's got that NBA body. And
sure.
I still think he's very raw when I've seen him out there.
Oh yeah,
he looks pretty lost on defense, and obviously Portland hasn't been really playing very well as a whole this season. But he's carved out some minutes, like you said. In November he kind of picked up quite a bit, and then it's been trailing off the last couple, and I don't really see him being anything fantasy relevant for standard leagues this year.
No.
But for dynasty leagues, definitely worth a look. You know, he could definitely be a guy that could put up some points and boards, and, you know, could develop into something. And I wouldn't shy away from him in deeper dynasty leagues like that. But for right now, there's not enough to really go off for picking him up, I think.
Quick fire question over to Red. Would you trade Nasir Little for a late first round draft pick in a dynasty league, say in the next draft?
Good
question. By late, I mean 15 to, let's say 15 to 25. Not super late, but late-ish after the lottery.
That is a great question. I would lean towards no, just because if you look at Portland's wing rotation right now, it's Bazemore and Hood.
Right.
Like, those are not long-term solutions. They obviously drafted him with intentions. I mean, it kind of depends on how deep your league is already as far as roster spots go, because you could end up getting, like, say, for instance, it's a 15 roster league. Like, you could end up getting the pieces off of somebody else's bench with that pick rather than holding on to a project into Nasir Little, somebody who might actually help you out this year. So if your team is good and trying to win, I don't think I would hold on to Nasir Little, and I'd probably take the pick.
Sure.
Open up that spot.
Yeah. Sure. Makes sense. So moving on to the next topic here, there's news coming out that Zion Williamson will be remaining out for another 6 to 8 weeks. Doesn't look like he's re-aggravated anything, any type of an injury, but it does seem as though the Pelicans are going to be extremely cautious with their young stars' return. So I'm curious, Kevin, what are your thoughts about Zion Williamson being, you know, he's being handled with care. The white gloves are on with the number one draft pick in New Orleans. I wonder if this is a result of the Pelicans maybe not performing as well as people thought they would, or as the franchise thought they would be at this point. And also another, you know, early draft pick, Marvin Bagley, is going to be reevaluated at the end of the week. These two guys are obviously young, obviously very talented. Well, we don't know really with Zion yet, but I'm assuming very talented. Kev, what are your thoughts on Zion? And then if you could, you know, give us your thoughts on Bagley coming back and what to expect for these young guys as they get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, I mean, the Zion news is very disappointing. I cannot, as a basketball fan, I cannot wait to see him out there. His first game back, even though he'll probably be limited minutes, all that, that's must-see TV for me. But it is concerning. I mean, this is now, it's basically doubled his out time here. And I don't think there has been anything reported about any sort of specific things that happened that caused a setback. But, you know, the concerns for him coming into the league is just that he's such a big guy, and you know, he's such an explosive player that it's just kind of a recipe for you know, lots of injuries. And I hope that he's able to kind of get past that and learn how to, you know, play within himself, but also keep himself safe and you know, injury free. And I can't wait to see him play, and I think he's going to be. If he can stay healthy, I think he has potential to be great. And so,
sure.
Hopefully, you know, as we get closer to the All-Star break, you know, he gets out there and kind of shows what he can do. But it is concerning. And you know, I think dynasty-wise, people drafted him expecting him to be this, you know, potential top 30, top 40 player this year. I mean, and so you're kind of all out of luck at that point. If you drafted him,
you're stuck
expecting that production. Yeah. And so even moving forward, the whole injury stuff, you know, if he was a smaller player, I wouldn't think anything of it, but you know, whenever these guys get that big and Zion is legit big,
The Joel Embiid treatment.
It is. It is. And you have to wonder, is this going to be
handle with care?
Is he going to be sort of in this mode where he's going to be missing a lot of games or out for long stretches throughout his career? And hopefully that's not the case. And just to touch on Bagley, you know, he'll be back soon. I'm guessing, you know, a couple, like maybe another two or three more games and we might see him out there. And he's just sort of an automatic, you know, 18 and 10 type guy, 16 and 10, maybe. He's going to be, you know, I think the Kings badly miss him. And especially with Fox being out, they need somebody out there that can kind of, you know, take over. And I think, you know, he's going to take on a big offensive load. So if you've been waiting this long, if you've had him in your IR, hopefully you can get ready to fire him up and roll him out on your lineup soon. It'll be good to see him out there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've had him in my in our Fantasy Unicorns League. I have him in my IR along with his teammate De'Aaron Fox, and it's been a rough go. I wasn't planning on winning very much, but it's definitely been difficult with Bagley out. I do wonder if he's going to be able to come back and instantly and you know, right away be able to provide the value that we're hoping for. But we'll see what happens with him. I'm luckily for him, his game actually doesn't rely all that much on athleticism. So in his case, I'm hoping that he'll kind of be able to come right back. It was a non-displaced fracture of his right thumb. So it's his hand, and that sometimes can take his shooting touch, might take a little time to get back, but hopefully he's able to return with some consistency. And if listeners, if you want to hear and read a little bit more about our thoughts as a panel on Zion's return, please check out our roundtable article on thefantasyunicorns.com. We've got some extended thoughts on Zion's return and the impact that his return will have on the Pelicans roster. Rhett, we're very excited for John Collins and DeAndre Ayton to hopefully come back soon from their 25-game suspensions that they each received for, in the case of Ayton, having medication in a system that flushes out a diuretic, that flushes out your system, which is a sign of attempting to evade a drug test. And of course, John Collins was found with PEDs in his system. I believe that they're both about, I think, between 9 and 11 games from coming back. I'm not 100% sure, but they will be back in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Obviously, people have been expecting them. What are your thoughts on Collins and Ayton coming back from suspension soon?
So Ayton has 7 games left on his suspension. Collins has 9.
Okay. There you go. So not 9 to 11. It was 7 to 9, but all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Those two games matter to those owners who have been holding out very this much long in those redraft leagues.
Kevin's one of them in our expert league.
Yeah. I'm the type of guy who would scoop them up immediately. I'll take the 2 weeks of losses for the 10 weeks of having a guy, a top 30 guy, picked up off the waivers.
But do you think they were getting dropped in the first place?
I know for one of our Patreons, they were talking to us and they were like, guys, I have Ayton. Someone just dropped Collins. Do I pick him up too? And my initial reaction was, yes, you should, because he's top 30 when he's healthy or not doing PEDs, but he already had a ton of other big men. But the main takeaway from here is that your buy low window on the owners being fed up with them having a roster spot taken up is closing quickly. It might have already closed, honestly, because now you're over halfway. In the case of Ayton, you're over a third of the, or over two thirds of the way. There's only a third left. So you're like, okay, I might as well just hold on to him for the rest of this. I'm excited to see them come back. I don't know what the Suns are going to look like with Ayton coming back. Baines has been...
Well, Baines is out too.
He's out, yeah. But now Frank Kaminsky's out there. He's got, right now, at the end of the third quarter, he's got 23 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, with 3 made threes and 83% field goal shooting. So they might not even need Ayton.
Yikes. I do not like Frank the Tank, but whatever. I mean, he has had a few good games. He's been wildly inconsistent, which is my problem with him.
Very much so. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he can do it in isolated cases.
My cousin, actually, who's in my dynasty league, got a trade offer a week or so ago. It was Capella and Brogdon for Ayton, Dennis Smith Jr., and I think a couple picks. And boy, that is an offer right there. I think ultimately he ended up declining
it. That's a big offer.
Yeah, he ended up declining it because Capella's free throw percentage is just on it. He's like flirting with like being the top three with free throw percentage. That's one of the categories he's kind of counting on. And so I think he ended up declining, but I think they're also still in talks. So if you get an offer like that, that's something worth considering. And if you can send something, that's kind of where the bar is right now, at least for dynasty leagues.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Final piece of news here for the week in review. Draymond and LaMarcus Aldridge have both been sitting out for, in the case of Draymond, rest. In the case of LaMarcus Aldridge, a sore thigh. In both of these cases, these are teams who were hoping to perform better, but up until this point have underperformed, let's say. Kev, what are your thoughts here? What are your takeaways here from these kind of strategic spot resting that we've seen from the Spurs and the Warriors up until this point?
Yeah, for two big guys that are in their 30s, it's not looking good for the fantasy champs. I guess Draymond's turning 30 in March, but either way, these are not young guys. And it's definitely disappointing if you drafted Draymond expecting, especially with Clay being out this season, for him and to really have a big role in the Warriors. And so I know a couple people got burned by him pretty good that I know, and drafted him sort of in that 50 range, and he's kind of barely hanging into that top 100 overall. And it's just his play has been so sporadic. You know, he's been getting rest time, like you were saying, Tony, and even when he does get in there, like the last game he played, he only played 17 minutes, before that 23 minutes. So he's not getting, even when he gets in the games, he's not getting enough time to really do much with it. And so with the Warriors having the worst record in the league, it's just not a good combination. And I know there's been rumors of potential trades involving him. So who knows? I guess a trade would actually be the best news for a fantasy GM.
Indeed.
But either way, you're kind of just out of luck with him. I mean, at least LaMarcus Aldridge has been playing well, even though he's missed the last couple and looks like he's missing. He'll miss the next one as well, probably. But at least he was kind of putting up top 30 numbers when he was in there. But overall, these are both guys that based on the team situations, it's not looking good if you pick them up for your fantasy teams.
Yeah, fair point. I do wonder with Draymond if it isn't. He just, at this point they're saying, why play him when Steph and Clay are out? Let's just keep him fresh. He's got, let's see what he's worth in the trade market. I think that's a great point. For LaMarcus Aldridge, I just wonder, I think that they'll be doing this strategically with him through the season. I also wonder if they're making sure that he doesn't get injured so that he maintains trade value. It's definitely, I think, for both of these guys, if they get traded, it's definitely a positive for them.
Yep.
So that concludes our week in review. Next, we're going to talk about some of our biggest letdowns and biggest surprises here as we sit about a quarter into the 2019-2020 NBA season. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us once again. So now we'd like to walk you through our first quarter takes. We're about a quarter of the way through the NBA season. Most teams are playing their 20, 21st, 22nd games this week. And we'd like to take stock of where we're at about a quarter of the way through the season. We're first going to talk about our biggest letdowns relative to the hype of these teams. There were several teams that were coming in extremely hyped, be it in the league pass rankings, be it in our personal fantasy. We were looking at these teams hoping to find fantasy value, and up until now they've unfortunately let us down. First up on the docket, we've got the Portland Trailblazers. We've talked about them a little bit with regard to Melo, Nasir Little, injuries to Zach Collins, but that doesn't really tell the whole story with regard to why the Portland Trailblazers have struggled so much. Rhett, I mean, what do you think has been the Blazers' issue, and why is it that they've been such a letdown so far this season?
I don't know. I honestly, it doesn't seem like that. Yeah, there doesn't seem to be anything. Obviously, I live in the Midwest, so West Coast games are way past my bedtime. But it kind of seems like Portland is running an ISO-heavy offense and just not playing very good defense, which is what you would expect from a team that plays Melo 30 minutes a night. Dame and CJ aren't great defenders. And then Hassan Whiteside in the middle, while it may seem like he's a good defender because he's averaging like 3 blocks a game or something like that, he is not great. I think any Miami Heat fan will tell you that he chases blocks pretty significantly. So that is 4 out of 5 positions that are below average or average at best defensively. And that it's just very tough to win that way.
Yeah, agreed. And I just wonder with the Blazers, if they have any consistency on the defensive side, it's just so difficult for them because they, you know, with Nurkic on the floor, because of his mobility, he actually, you know, was able to kind of be covered defensively and they made it work. I really wonder if, you know, I thought that they'd get better defensively when they added Bazemore, but mm-hmm. he really hasn't been able to break into that rotation as much as we thought he would. They really need their bench to step up, and it hasn't really been happening. Obviously, when you have to resort to Melo and you're giving him those minutes, it means that your bench is probably not in the best position. And frankly, you know, Dame and CJ can only do so much. Hassan Whiteside isn't giving you the energy that you're hoping for, that they were hoping for when they brought him in. It's really been, well, as we've said, a letdown for the Blazers up to this point. I really do think, though, that despite the downturn, there might be an opportunity here to buy low on some of these Portland players, because I do bet on them figuring it out at some point. I think that they're going to come back. Terry Stotts is a pretty seasoned, well-known coach. He knows his players. I think there's a chance that this team could gel together at some point, and it might really be nice to be able to say, wow, you know, I actually picked up or I went and I got one of these guys. Obviously, Dame is going to be expensive, but, you know, I think you might be able to get him. Just the narrative around the Blazers hasn't been great. CJ McCollum is still, you know, providing pretty decent value. So maybe you can use this to your advantage in that regard. Kev, another team that's been a pretty big letdown. We touched on them lightly earlier, but the Spurs, I mean, San Antonio has always been one of those teams where we're saying, well, is this the year, you know, that maybe they don't make it? And they always surprise us. Are there any signs that the Spurs could revitalize and, you know, bring the paddles out and shock their season back to life?
I wouldn't bet on it. You know, I think this is just going to be one of those seasons to forget for the Spurs and Pop.
Sure.
And I think it's just kind of a weirdly constructed team. And you have a lot of guys out there that I think – probably shouldn't be playing that many minutes, but are, you know, you have someone like DeMar DeRozan, which is, he just is kind of a weird fit, I think, he just in the NBA in general, probably. And they have the two guards, DeJounte and Derek White, and they haven't really figured out how to play them together.
Talk about
very
a
well.
Letdown.
Yeah. A lot of people were very high on both. I was particularly high on Derek White, and, you know, that's blown up in my face in at least one league. And, you know, and DeJounte Murray has, you know, while he is a top-notch defender, it's just the rest of his game hasn't really come along like a lot of people were expecting, and he hasn't been putting up the stats that people thought he was. But overall, it's just it's a big letdown. Now, they did have a big game from Lonnie Walker last night, and so he could be an interesting guy to keep an eye on, but
he
is
has flashes.
Mainly he's mainly just a scorer. So again, you're not looking at a very diverse fantasy type game, but maybe just to get some W's for the team, maybe he's a guy that could come in and give that scoring burst. But overall, I don't really foresee them improving too much this season.
So one question to you, if DeMar DeRozan give me some quick hitters, a couple guys who you think would benefit the most if DeMar DeRozan gets traded and if LaMarcus Aldridge gets traded, or really if LaMarcus Aldridge right. gets traded. If either of these guys gets traded, which ones do you think on the roster you would target as getting the biggest lift?
Yeah, I mean, it's tight. I think if they're moving those guys, they're very clearly showing that they're going young. And they're going to want to get Murray and White out there as much as possible, get Lonnie Walker a ton of minutes, see what they have in Trey Lyles, probably in that power forward spot. Maybe even
he's letting me down.
I don't think he's that good of a player, honestly, but he's shown flashes in the past. So it's something that I think they owe it to themselves if they go that route. To kind of make sure, you know, there's not
see
some
what
untapped
he can
potential.
Do. Yeah. He's a versatile player. He does good things on the floor. He just doesn't assert himself. And because I've been holding on to Trey Lyles for a couple of years in one of our larger leagues. I drafted him like last round in the startup draft for this 30-team league. And he's always kind of had a special place in my heart. And this season, I was really looking to him to step up, and it really hasn't happened. It's kind of a letdown. But, you know, maybe it's because LaMarcus Aldridge is limiting his potential with regard to what he can do, you know? And so maybe he would get a boost. What about Chimezie Metu? Is he on either of your radar, Rhett? If is he on your radar at all?
No, not really. I mean, it's like you said, that might be.
He's bouncing back and forth from G League, yeah. But he's played in 6 games this season. Obviously, he's not. But, you know, I mean, right. he was a late round draft pick, one of these guys mm-hmm. that the Spurs gets. But he's been playing here and there.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting once we decide, or once they decide what direction they're going to go in, what the Spurs rotation looks like. I'm really looking forward to it.
So the next team to talk about, Rhett, for you is the Pelicans. I wish we had Jay on to give his take, because we know he's our big time Pelicans fan, but. They've been a letdown. Early in the season, they seemed like they might be one of those fringe playoff teams, but up until now, they haven't really lived up to that. Rhett, what's your take been on the Pelicans here at a quarter way?
Their biggest problem, I think, is mostly health, but also defense, but they also kind of tie together. So they're just not defending people well at all. They're allowing a lot of points, and part of that, I think, comes from Derek Favors being out either with the back injury or the personal stuff with his mom. And then Lonzo also being out with some nicked up injury that it seems like he's got 2 or 3 of a year. I think that it's hard for them to get something going when their rotations have been so crazy. They have, I think I mentioned it in the roundtable, like you said, but they've got 12 legitimate NBA basketball players, which is a hard rotation to keep consistent. And if it's not consistent, it's going to be tough to get in. You know, defensive rotations is so much about communication and all of that. And if you're playing with 9 different guys any given night, it's very, very tough to keep that going. But I am hoping that it gets better as Lonzo starts getting more minutes and Favors starts getting healthy and getting back in a place where he can play a bunch of minutes, because I have both of them in the Dynasty League that I'm in.
So the next big letdown team is the Utah Jazz. Mike Conley has not been the answer on offense that they hoped that he would be. And the Jazz have really had struggles this season, whether it was with the Sixers recently really struggling, down by a lot, but able to kind of chip away, but still getting the loss there. People say that alarm bells are ringing in Utah. Kevin, what's your take been on the Jazz so far, and why have they not lived up to the expectations where some people had them potentially as contenders in this year's Western Conference?
Yeah, Utah definitely was sort of a hot pick for one of the top, you know, three or four teams in the West. And, you know, I think they're still in sixth place in the West. You know, they're six games back from the Lakers, so they're not in a too rough shape. But I agree, they've been playing pretty bad lately. They've lost two in a row. And the play of Mike Conley has really been a big letdown, both in fantasy and in real life. I have him in one of my leagues, and you know he's barely playable, and now he's hurt. So the problem too is there's not really a clear cut guy next in line to step in the point guard position. So they're gonna probably have to rely a lot more on Joe Ingles for a little bit. Unless they think Moutier can step up. But overall, it's not clear why they've been so bad of recent to me. But I think I expect them to bounce back. I think Donovan Mitchell is, even though fantasy-wise he's hasn't had a great season, he's had an okay season, he has great potential. And I think he will kind of keep this thing going and keep it together, keep the team together.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously you have the amazing defense of someone like Gobert and Royce O'Neal. But I think Conley will, when he gets back, he will return back to closer to what we were expecting. I don't think he's going to be that top 30 player that he was in the past. But,
sure.
You know, I this is a team that I think will hang in there. I still would pick them to probably be in the bottom bottom two spots in the playoffs at the end of the season. But I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes. They've obviously been a bit of a disappointment, though.
Yeah. It's been tough for the Jazz. I do wonder if, you know, Joe Ingles really will step up. I wonder if he has it in him. He's looked a step slow this season so far. He played a lot in the summer. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I am very hopeful that Mike Conley is able to come back to the status that he was in back in Memphis. So finally, the last team with a letdown. It's my beloved Atlanta Hawks. It's been tough. Obviously, John Collins being out has been a big problem for this team. The suspension has weighed heavily. Also, Kevin Huerter, who's back tonight, luckily, but he missed about 10 games with a strained rotator cuff. Without those guys, it's been really tough to have consistency, and obviously, it's a very young roster. Bruno Fernando has spent some time in the G League. Cam Reddish has struggled with his shooting and turnovers, and DeAndre Hunter obviously has struggled to assert himself, and he's had his fair share of injury issues. Reddish has also has sat out the last three games. He's back tonight. The Hawks are struggling. They've been really bad. They just broke a 10-game losing streak recently, beating the Warriors. Rhett, what are your takeaways? I mean, we all were hoping that players like Alex Len, players like DeAndre Bembry, DeAndre Hunter in this case as well, we were hoping that they would be contributors, but they really haven't really – they haven't quite stood up to the level that we were hoping for. What's your take on the Hawks this a quarter way through the season where they've really been losing a lot?
Yeah, I felt like coming into the season that Atlanta was one of those teams with like a 6 or 7, like 6 through 8 seed ceiling, but about where they are now as far as the floor, just because I didn't have any clue what Len would bring to the table. I didn't know how Hunter was going to be. They just had so many unclear pieces that would have to contribute in order for them to be good. And we're kind of seeing the result of that right now. Obviously, Collins being out there goes 20 points, 10 rebounds right off the bat, and so much more pressure is put on Trey. Alex Len, I think you could speak to this better than any of us, but he's been garbage except for a handful of games where he's been decent.
Been rough.
Even his minutes, like he's at like 15, 8, 8, 3, 15. Like just the minutes have been nowhere to be found. And especially with Collins out, you would have thought that would have been a thing. But Reddish has been, you know, I think somebody was saying before the year started, it's like, well, the good news for Reddish is that he can't shoot any worse than what he did at Duke because he was like 23% from three or something like that. It's like, oh no, yes you can. Like he has been a bad NBA player, and with Herter being out and then Collins being out, they've really needed to rely on him and Bembry and Jabari Parker, and it just has not been going well in terms of wins. Obviously Jabari Parker's been producing some stats, but they've just been
winning.
Not winning. I'll hold all judgment or most judgment until Collins comes back and they start to get in a groove of things, but it's not looking good.
No, it's not. On Reddish, from a fantasy perspective, I don't really know what the expectations were for him. I don't think that anyone was really expecting him to come in and shoot with efficiency. He's obviously a project in any case. And if anyone's picking him, if anyone has him on their team, they either drafted him in a dynasty league or it's a super deep league. And you're not expecting a ton from him. But I do think that he has enough. I think that he's shown glimpses of being an NBA basketball player. He gets into positions to score. He's really talented off the dribble, but it's been tough for him. It's been really tough for him. So anyway, moving on, we're going to move into some of our biggest surprises of the season. These are some teams and by extension, the players who have surprised us the most this season. It could be narratives that surprise us. It could be players or storylines that surprise us. I'm going to start with Kevin. Kevin, give us your biggest surprise a quarter of the way through the season.
For me, it's got to be Dallas. You know, we all knew, you know, the Luka and Porzingis combo had potential. But at this point, they are the number four team in the West. And they just had a big win against the Lakers, beating them by 14. And the play of Luka Doncic has been insane. You know, he took, and I think we talked about it previously, but he kind of took the issues that he had last year. He had a great rookie year, but he really refined his game and improved on all of the little things that, you know, needed improving, and has come out and been just an MVP level player this season. And I think his play along with, with Porzingis has been great. And even though overall Porzingis has been, you know, he's been okay. He's been about what we expected, you know, top 50 ish player. But when you look at the rest of the roster, you know, there's not a lot else that really stands out that much. And it's, so it really kind of shows how impactful the play of Luka has been this season. And he's obviously garnered a lot of attention and a lot of praise, you know, even from guys like LeBron. And so for me, I had Dallas as kind of, you know, maybe borderline getting that eighth spot in the playoffs this year. And right now being number four and looking really strong, that's definitely been a huge surprise for me.
Yeah, I think Dallas is a great call out. I don't know if any of us really would have guessed that Luka Doncic would emerge as a top five MVP candidate. It's been something to watch. Rhett, the people are dying to know, what is your biggest surprise for the first quarter of the 2019 season?
So honorable mention to Toronto losing finals MVP and still coming out and balling without Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka. Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet have been ridiculous. OG made a step. IU boy. But my team that has been the most surprising is Minnesota. And the reason for that is Andrew Wiggins has finally started to look like a modern NBA basketball player and someone who's worthy of a second overall pick. Now, they're only 10-9 right now. The record isn't showing that they're super improved, but they're also sitting at the 7 spot, which is surprising. And I think that they just moved Teague to the bench so they could start Culver at point guard, which essentially puts the ball in Wiggins' hands more and Karl-Anthony Towns' hands more, which is exactly what you want. And they just – they seem to be making competent basketball decisions, both as an organization and as individual players, like I said, with Wiggins, which is important moving forward. They're like, okay, Teague is not
a
part
surprise.
Of our future. Yeah, exactly. It's like you feel like you shouldn't need to call that out, but sometimes you do. And so moving away from Teague and going to Culver, who they moved up to draft and then skipped over Kobe White to take him, or they passed on Kobe White to take Jarrett Culver. So they saw something. And moving towards the future while also still being above 500 and right now would be in the playoffs is very, very surprising. So competent decision-making, winning, Andrew Wiggins, Minnesota is my surprise team.
No, I love it. I think a lot of people have been looking to Minnesota and saying, could this have been guessed? And I really don't think anyone would have guessed that Minnesota would step out to this degree and actually put those pieces together that people have been so excited about and made them, quote unquote, spooky for so many years. Never really worked out. My biggest surprise, and it's not really that this team has been so surprisingly good. It's actually more what this team has been able to do sort of from a narrative standpoint. For me, it's the Brooklyn Nets. The surprise here being that the surprise here is that, you know, the Nets have actually been pretty good without Kyrie Irving. It definitely has not helped the narrative from last season that Kyrie was kind of the reason that the Celtics had so many struggles. The Nets have been 7-3 without Kyrie. That rhymes. It's been difficult for them this season. Obviously, I don't think 10-10 where they stand right now is where they'd want to be at this point. They were hoping to push up into the top four spots in the East this season, even without Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving has missed some time, fair enough. And it's strange that it's actually been when Kyrie Irving has been on the floor that they've had the biggest struggles. The team that has logged the most minutes together and has played 11 games with a win-loss record of 6-5, by team I mean the five-player lineup, has an offensive rating of 111 and a defensive rating of 103 for a net rating of 8.2, positive net rating there. Very impressive. That five-man lineup is Garrett Temple, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Taurean Prince, and Jared Allen. It's not Kyrie Irving. Is not on that list. He is, however, on the next best lineup, which actually has a slightly negative net rating. The next highest lineup in terms of minutes, I should say. 97 minutes logged together. This is a negative 0.6 net rating. The defense is 111 and the offensive rating is 110. Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, who is out right now, which obviously plays a role, and Taurean Prince and Jared Allen. So Jared Allen, Taurean Prince are those players who have been mainstays in this lineup. Garrett Temple has been someone who, in your standard league, if you're, you know, looking for someone desperate, Garrett Temple's not a horrible choice. And Spencer Dinwiddie, who has been very, very good this season. Since Kyrie has been out, 33 minutes a game, 25 points a game, 3 rebounds, 7 assists, 2.5 threes a game, shooting 43% from the field, not great, but 95% from the line. He's a good sell-high candidate, in my opinion, Dinwiddie, when Kyrie comes back, but he's obviously been able to do that this season with Kyrie out. It really is, you know, the Nets have been really confusing. There are a lot of guys here who you don't know if there's any consistency in that roster, but it's been really a surprise to see the Nets perform as well as they have without Kyrie Irving. And then on the flip side, how much they've struggled with him on the floor. So it's going to be an interesting thing to keep track of this season. And obviously from a fantasy perspective, you're definitely going to want to keep an eye for those periphery guys like your Torian Prince, like your Garrett Temple, you know, who potentially might be providing some value. That concludes our first quarter take section. Stick with us as we walk you through some of our experiences in our dynasty leagues, giving you some of that dynasty focus that we have at the Fantasy Unicorns. So stick with us. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back, friends. Here to round out this episode, this 14th episode of the Fantasy Unicorns Basketball Podcast, we want to take you through a little bit of our personal experiences in our leagues as we sit at the quarter point of the season. This is a really good time from a fantasy standpoint to sit, take stock of your team, see where you're at, identify if maybe it's time to change strategy, change direction, see if there are maybe some trades that need to be made, or see if there's some waiver wire guys that you need to pick up, or potentially, you know, drop some guys. So each of us are going to share some of our experiences that we have, some decisions that we want to make. I'm going to start with Kevin. Kevin, what's a team and a circumstance that you're dealing with right now in one of your leagues, and walk us through your decision making and your strategy?
Sure. So I'm in a dynasty league that I co-manage with Jay from the Fantasy Unicorns as well. And this was kind of a weird league that was put together by the Razzball fantasy basketball guys. And they did an auction and they did it in unique way. It's definitely been an interesting league. But because of the injuries to Kyrie and Otto Porter and now Marcus Smart, it's left us in 27th out of 30th place. So we are now taking stock of this and realizing there's no way that we have, even when those guys come back. That's what we're shooting for at this point. And so I put it out there in the group chat. And I definitely recommend for all, especially dynasty leagues, to make sure that you have a group chat so that you can kind of communicate this stuff out to your league, is that we're looking at potentially blowing it up and moving some of these very useful players to contenders in exchange for youth and draft picks if we're looking to rebuild. And so and with Dynasty, it's sort of like the NBA, where you either want to be competing or you want to be tanking, sort of being in that middle area, unless you know it's due to injuries or suspensions or something like that. It's not really the best place to be. You're just kind of stuck in the middle. And so I think we are now going to lean into our current badness and really try to take some get some draft picks and take some chances on some young guys. And it's been interesting because it generated a lot of discussion when I posted that, because again, it's Kyrie who, when he's healthy, he's a top 10 player. Otto Porter, when he's healthy, he's a top 40, top 50 player. Marcus Smart, you know, in a 30 team league, he has a lot of value. And then we also have Maxi Kleber and Dwight Powell, who are very serviceable big men in deep leagues. But none of those guys probably fit in our future if we're trying to build long-term. And so far I have not been particularly impressed with any of the offers. And it's interesting to see how people value, first round draft picks. A lot of people not wanting to necessarily even give up, a decent first round pick for Kyrie. So that may put a hold on us, in the tanking, if we're not really getting the best offers. But it's been interesting so far. And I, you know, when I throw it to you guys, if you had Kyrie and you were trying to move him in a 30-team league, what would be sort of a reasonable offer that you would consider? The best one we've gotten so far is two sort of back-end firsts, and a second. And Aaron Holiday, who is a young guy, you know, and he's got some potential. But to me,
that's the youngest. That's the youngest holiday.
The youngest holiday. Yes, youngest is. Of the three.
Right. Pacer boy.
Yeah, and Pacer I know. Boy, yep. And I know Jay is very high on him as a player. I don't know about his opportunity with Brogdon there.
We're evaluating this from a 30-team dynasty standpoint.
Correct. Right? 30-team dynasty.
Sure, and you're turning into, and the idea here is that you're turning into a rebuild.
The idea is, what can we get for these guys that are not going to be really key parts of our team 3 years from now? What can we get for them to kind of build towards that eventual goal? My thought was a potential young stud, a guy that could be that maybe is, in the top 100 now, but has the potential to be sort of a top 30-ish player and a first round pick for Kyrie. And I don't know if that's asking too much. I know he has obviously injury concerns. Mm-hmm. But when he does play, like I said, he's a top 10 player. I don't know. What do you guys think?
To me, if I'm trading Kyrie, I want, like, exactly like what you said, a young stud. And as a Pacer fan, I don't know if Aaron Holiday will be that young stud.
Right.
He's had some good games lately, but I just don't, like, if he's the big piece in a trade for Kyrie, even in a 30-team league where depth is just ridiculous, I don't think I could do it, especially, again, if the picks are mid to late firsts. Mm-hmm. You're looking at that's not a great return for somebody, like you said, who can be top 10. I would probably do Otto for Holiday and some picks.
Yeah.
Smart for go down the list, but not Kyrie, I don't think.
Yeah. And Jay had this concern, too, with just he didn't think we would get.
Yeah.
Reasonable value for Kyrie, especially while he's injured.
Injured, yeah.
We had to throw it out there to kind of see, and I have some ongoing discussions with a couple guys, but I agree. I think if I could get, two sort of okay first round picks for Otto Porter, I would probably consider that. Or a young player and a first. But with Kyrie, I would need to have a guy that I felt confident could get me into that top 30 value along with a first round pick.
What if it was Tyler Herro in a first?
I don't think I would go that route either.
I wouldn't either.
Nope.
What about Fultz?
Fultz is interesting.
Ooh.
he's been playing well lately.
Yeah, he's been.
I would have to think about that one a little bit. Maybe depends on how good the first is. I don't think Fultz would necessarily. I don't see him being a top 30 player at any point. But you never know. I mean, maybe he gets there. But I kind of see him more as like a top 50-ish player when he gets it all together. But we'll have to see. That's not a bad idea either. Maybe I'll go see who the Fultz.
Hachimura.
It's funny. Someone brought up Hachimura to me because we also have Brandon Clark, who we're not trying to trade, and he was interested in making that swap. And I was like, not interested in that.
Brandon Clark can truly be like a 3-5 stat guy. Every night.
Exactly. So I think he was kind of touting Hachimura's recent field goal percentage, and I was like, he's okay player.
Field goal percentage.
But that's not the direction.
What about Jared Allen and a mid to late first
for Kyrie? I probably still wouldn't do that. I think I have a feeling maybe I'm valuing Kyrie more higher than everybody else. I think when he's out there, he's a force, and so I'm not willing to just for the sake of rebuilding give him up for 50 cents on the dollar.
I will make this point. When I have torn down teams in the past, generally speaking, if a manager knows that you are turning into a rebuild, it's harder to negotiate with them because they know your stance.
Yeah.
So more often than not, when you're in a rebuild, you kind of have to give up a little bit more because you're betting on potential. It's inherently risky. So, in the past, I just want to make that point. In the past, I've certainly taken deals. Recently, I took a deal where I traded Steven Adams for two future draft picks. It was a 2022 and a 2024. Mm. Wow. Total, just that's what I did. I made that trade because I couldn't keep it. It was, I should add that it's a salary league.
Okay.
That makes a whole other
makes it big.
Yeah.
But you know, I couldn't keep Adams, and I knew that I wanted to turn into a tank. The other guy knew that I needed to get rid of Adams. He knew that I had to get rid of him because of his salary. So I think I got a player back too. I don't remember who it was. I definitely got a player back, but it was a player and two future picks for Steven Adams.
Yeah.
The 22 draft for me is a target draft.
Yeah.
Because
the double draft.
Exactly. Yep. The double draft. So I valued that pick higher. And so, but that was definitely not a favorable deal for me. 100% not a favorable deal for me, but sometimes you have to make that deal to get it done.
Yeah, no, it depends. I've had good luck in one league rebuilding. Actually, it's that Reddit league that I'm in with you, Tony.
Talk about doing a deal. We should do it live on the podcast.
just for the podcast. I went in last year and was like, all right, I'm gonna blow this thing up, and I got really good returns on a couple older players. And before I knew it, I just had a stockpile of firsts. And the thing with Dynasty Leagues is if you end up with a lot of first-round picks, you have a lot of flexibility for making other moves. And so even if you don't plan on keeping those picks or making those picks, come draft time, GMs start paying up for those picks.
Yep.
They're itching to get in on the draft, and so
start seeing some summer league highlights, and then all of a sudden,
right, exactly,
4 and 5 starts looking nice.
Yeah, so I've had a really good result in that league. I'm not expecting the same type of return on this league that I was just discussing, but it's interesting. Rebuilding is definitely it's actually one of Jay's favorite things to do. He likes to he likes to blow it up and. He's the prospect guy, so he likes to test his skill on who he drafts and stuff. So it'll be interesting. So if I end up making some trades, I'll let you guys know about it.
Let the people know.
For sure.
So Rhett, over to you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Jeff, one of our fellow fantasy unicorns, had to discuss with us as a team.
Yeah, so I saw Jeff tweeted out that he traded for Jonathan Isaac in one of his leagues, and I'm a trade obsessor. Like, it's just that's probably my favorite part of fantasy is just the art of the deal. And so I asked him about it, and he said that he sent away.
All right, Donnie Trump. Okay, Donnie.
Eric Pascal for the Warriors and Josh Richardson for Jonathan Isaac. And I asked him what size league it was and all the other aspects about it. And it's a 16 team league. I had it pulled up. Yeah. 16 team league where they keep 10, and he already had his 10 pretty much decided. And Pascal and Richardson, I think Richardson might have been one of them. But yeah, he did a 2-for-1, opened up a keeper spot, and got Jonathan Isaac in a keeper league where there's no penalty for keeping a player year after year after year. Jonathan Isaac right now is top 15 with scoring 13.5 points a game.
So that is such a lopsided.
I don't understand how it happened. Maybe the team's competing that has Jonathan Isaac, but he's so valuable now. I don't really get it. But
Eric Pascal, I mean, come on.
He's only valuable this year while literally half of the Warriors team is hurt. All of their all-stars are out. But
I mean, I get it. Listen, he's a rookie, so in a dynasty, I guess it makes sense. But I still, Jonathan Isaac is
way better than
good for Jeff.
Yeah.
Good for Jeff.
So I had to retweet it and put in my own thoughts and was basically saying how that deal right there, making something happen like that, is exactly what dynasty owners need to be looking for. Obviously, you won't luck into a situation like that, and it's always hard to get a two-for-one done because most owners are smart to that. It's like, hey, I'm losing a roster spot here. But that is a trade that can change the course of a team when you can – you're not keeping the players and you get a top 15 dynasty asset back. It's just – I saw that trade and I wanted to join his league.
Huh, yeah, I think we all would. I definitely think that that's really, really good value for Jonathan Isaac, that's really good value for Josh Richardson and Eric Pascal,
yes,
who are kind of, you know, decent guys, middling guys, but Jonathan Isaac. Oof, and the fact that he's getting a keeper spot out of it too, that's pretty great. So definitely an interesting deal there. For me, I've got an interesting deal on the table. I manage a roster in the Reddit league that Kevin and I are in, along with Jay and a few other people. It's an interesting league. I was currently in the expanse. This season is my first season. I was in the expansion draft and I drafted Karl-Anthony Towns with the second pick in the expansion draft. I'm very happy with him. He's been very, very good. I'm currently ranked fifth in that league and doing very well. I'm sorry. I'm going to break for a second, 'cause I just saw a very interesting message come across from Rhett. Cam Reddish, 23 points, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block with 4 three-pointers.
56% shooting.
Oh, brother. I wrote a huge – so this is funny. I wrote a huge write-up on Reddit today. Mm-hmm. There was this post in the NBA discussion.
I saw it. Yeah.
And I had this super long response to it. Yes. Where essentially, I was like, I don't agree with anything that he was saying. I was like, his whole – like, Reddish is going to be fine. So it's really funny that he's doing this today. Anyway, for any of you Cam Reddish fans out there, very exciting stat line. Good for him. Good for him. Good to see. I'm not watching the game right now because I'm doing this gosh darn podcast.
Sorry to take that away from you if you
had. Yeah, well, to. I'm blaming you guys. Maybe it's because I'm not watching. Maybe Cam does better when I'm not watching. Anyway, so in this league where I'm currently fifth in the league, doing very well, got Karl-Anthony Towns, but I've also – it's a very old team. I've got Mike Conley on that roster. I've got LaMarcus Aldridge, Bielitsa, J.J. Redick. It's a good – it's a solid roster. He's offering me in return for Karl-Anthony Towns, one of the other teams in the league. Apparently, Kevin has told me that he's sort of notorious for making interesting trade offers. I was offered Nikola Jokic, Chris Boucher, and Harry Giles for Karl-Anthony Towns. To me, that's probably not the right value for Karl-Anthony Towns, who at this point is giving you top five value. I think that he's currently ranked in a standard league. Just pulling it up, he's fourth right now.
Yep.
Well, third if DeAndre Ayton, obviously he's only played one game, right. So he came out. Yeah. So it's actually third right now. Karl-Anthony Towns, super high value. Jokic has been a bit of a letdown so far this season, but obviously this is a dynasty league, so very high value there. But really it's Boucher and Giles. I wouldn't personally trade Karl-Anthony Towns for not a first round pick. Like, I would definitely need to get picks back for Karl-Anthony Towns, even if my roster currently is set up to contend. And I just don't think that adding Boucher and Giles, where I'd have to drop two guys who likely would be like Torrey Craig and, you know, well, currently I've got Pintz in there, but that's because I've got Aldridge and Dragic in my IR. But I've been dealing with injuries. I've been dealing Conley's injured. Dragic is injured. Aldridge is injured. I've been dealing with some injuries, but I'm still fifth in the league. I don't really feel like I need to make this move because I've got some decent depth. I mean, guys, would you do this type of a deal for Karl-Anthony Towns? What is it that you guys would be looking for if you were trading a big asset, top five asset like Karl-Anthony Towns?
For me, like, so you've got guys like Conley, Aldridge and Dragic, which to me means you're trying to contend, right?
Redick. Yep.
Yep. Definitely. Okay. So that is four very old, very win now players. Yeah. So I, what's the roster depth like? How many roster spots?
So it's seven actives and five reserves.
Okay. There's no way I would want to drop two win now guys so I could roster Boucher and Giles on a win now squad. That's not even to compare Jokic and Karl Anthony Towns, because Jokic started off super slow. He's like 45th overall right now, which is way lower.
Right? So it's not like the waiver wire is going to have anyone for me to pick up.
I don't think I would do that. I think if you maybe got, like, if they swapped either Boucher or Giles for a better win now piece, like someone's trying to get rid of some age, maybe. I don't know what that would look like. Who they
maybe have, we add a third team in the deal. Kev, are you rebuilding in the Reddit league?
No, I'm actually the number four team in that league. So.
Oh, you.
No big deal.
Yeah, I mean, not right the, ahead of me, not the flex on you or anything.
This season, this week is going to be real tough for me because Dragic, Aldridge, and Conley. I'm struggling right now. I'm actually rostering Theo Pinson.
Nice.
Do you understand?
Yeah, I mean, we're in some deep leagues here. So, it's interesting because I bet obviously Jokic has not had a good season compared to what expectations were, but they
still Kat a top 10 guy in Dynasty though.
Oh yes. Yeah, no, oh clearly. But I think hovering around that 50 mark for the season, and you know, the trade would have made more sense in the beginning of the season or before it started, as I think people kind of consider them the sort of the two top centers in the league, unless you, I guess Embiid's in there as well. But I don't know. Overall, like, I have Kat in our Fantasy Unicorns Dynasty League, and I floated it out there. You know, sometimes, and maybe this is to my own detriment, but I just kind of get a little bored, and I'm like, let me see what I can get for this guy. And so
let's just beat a bush and see what falls out. Right?
I floated Kat out there, and I was talking to one guy, and we started to kind of put something together, and basically what I was getting at was he threw Siakam into the mix, which I had interest in.
Ooh.
And he also had John Collins. So I was thinking about those two for Kat and another player, potentially, you know, maybe a Lonzo Ball or a Gallinari type. Something in that round with picks to kind of make it work.
I would do that deal.
He sounded interested. He said he would think about it, and then I never heard back. So I think he had
I don't know if I do that deal if I own. I don't know I do that deal if I roster Siakam and Collins.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah.
Because those two guys alone are worth maybe more than Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
Together. So, because they're also good complements to each other too.
Yeah, yeah, they are. So it's, I think you have to look at stuff like that. I mean, with Jokic, I mean, would you do Jokic and say a player like Brogdon for Kat and some change?
I would.
You would?
I would. Depending on my team construction, that's a big aspect of this that we don't. I do.
In this case, I'm contending, right? In this case, I'm contending.
It also like the stats that you need. That's what matters.
Right. I mean, in my case, with this team, I think I'm punting steals in this build, which is like whatever. And then outside of that, I'm kind of. It's just like consistency. I've got, you know. For me, I think. Assist could probably do the help, so Brogdon makes sense there. I could probably.
What's the difference? Because Conley, Jokic is like four assists on average.
That's a good point. Although Kat has been distributing a little bit more this season.
Yes, yeah, he has been better at that.
Yeah, and he's giving you all the threes. I mean, he's giving you three, four threes a game.
All right, I'm gonna throw one more random one at you and see, okay, what you think.
Sure. All right.
Cat for Trae Young and Jared.
Yo, Trae.
And maybe I was playing that angle of you. I thought you might be a little bit of a Trae Young.
Who was the second person there?
Jared Allen.
Trae Young, to me, the reason why I would say yes to this deal is because Trae Young can give me cat value at some point, right? Because it's all-star level at this point. And in 2 years, Trae Young could be, you know, 30 and 10. He could be, right? Like, and that's basically cat with like 30 and 10 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, so he's coming in at number 10 right now, I think.
I mean, it's, yeah, I would probably do that deal.
I probably would.
In Dynasty. In Dynasty with Jared Allen, too, I'd probably do that. If I have to give someone else, I don't know, if I can give someone towards the end of my roster, say my 10th or 12th guy.
Yeah.
Do that deal.
Okay. All right.
Do that deal. The Brogdon one, I'm not sure, because Brogdon, I don't know what his future looks like with Depot. And
you are buying a little bit high right now on Brogdon with that, but I do think.
Time.
Yeah, but you're also buying low on Jokic because
very low on Jokic.
Very low on Jokic, right? And for me,
how old is Jokic? He's like 22, 24. Yeah,
something. Yeah. I don't know how old he is, but
I mean, he's the same age as Karl Anthony Towns, basically. They are, you know.
Just you know, Jokic is gonna have that summer where he just strips like 40 pounds of fat off, and he's gonna come in. He's so young. I don't know how he can't.
It's a great deal. That deal's a good deal if I were maybe pivoting into trying to get a better draft pick.
Yeah.
But at the fifth spot where I'm at right now, I can't give up, to your point, Rhett, I can't give up my depth for, you know, for a guy who in a couple years is going to shed that weight and is going to, you know, be great. But right now, Karl Anthony Towns is that guy. But right now, he is that guy for me. And the way this roster is constructed, I'm not trading Karl Anthony Towns. He's the last. He's my life. He's my safety boat. When J.J. Redick retires, when Goran Dragic misses, you know, 50 games next season, when LaMarcus Aldridge gets too old and can't move around anymore, right? Like, this roster is going to die at some point, and I'm going to need to And I'm going to flip Karl Anthony Towns for a ton of picks and a player and a stud, right? And that's going to be my rebuild, and that's how I'm going to do it. So I can't do this deal right now. But it's interesting. It's interesting with a big guy like that, with a Karl Anthony Towns who's, you know, probably one of the most valuable assets in the fantasy world. It's definitely fun to talk through that. So, guys, I really appreciate your takes. Any final thoughts on Karl Anthony Towns as a trade asset?
Don't sell unless you're going to get a top 10 player back, would be my...
A potential top 10 player, right?
Correct. Yeah, so Trae Young, Jokic has proven that he can be top 10. But, I mean, Cat is solid top 3 dynasty asset, depending on how you rank Giannis and AD, or Luka, I guess, if you want to get funky.
But
can I add that maybe he's the most boring of the top dynasty players to roster? So for me,
if you're looking for some health scares, I guess you stay away from Karl Anthony Towns.
I guess so, but just more the play style for me. Yeah. Just while he's great, it's just
I don't know. I love watching him play. I don't know, man. He's awesome. He does everything. He's a shooter. He attacks the rim. He rebounds.
There's just something about him. I say this as somebody who rosters him on one of my dynasty leagues. It's there's something for me. There's some oomph lacking as far as the play style.
Who's more fun to watch for you, James Harden or Karl Anthony Towns?
Karl Anthony Towns every time.
Me too. Yeah, me as well.
But what about Embiid versus Karl Anthony Towns?
Karl Anthony Towns. Embiid.
No, I'm taking Embiid. I'm not saying that Embiid is better, but Embiid is, for me, a more fun player to watch.
Entertainment-wise, yes. Entertainment, yes. But rostering Embiid gives you heartburn.
It does.
I have him in a points dynasty league in the Draft Master Points League with Matt Lawson, and it's been tough. Anyway, that team wasn't really meant to be. That team is a. It's a lot of. It's my first points league that I've done in a long, long time. It's been like 3 years, so it's definitely been an interesting re-entry into that space. So I'm taking my time with that roster. I like Embiid. I think he's a fun points play because of all the things that he does. But anyway, that concludes our episode of the Fantasy Unicorns Basketball Podcast. We tried to give you some more dynasty, some more trade information. Keep an eye out for more content on thefantasyunicorns.com. Go and check out our roundtable discussion. Some of the things that we talked about here on the podcast, we go into more detail in the roundtable discussion. It's been up for about a week. A lot of interesting takes from all of us here at the Fantasy Unicorns. We appreciate you listening. Gentlemen, Rhett, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter.
Yep. At Rhett_Bauer, RHETT_BAUER. I've had a couple of people reach out to me this week about pickups, rest of the season rankings, and some trade stuff. Love seeing all of it, so keep it up.
I was all over your waiver wire article this week. All over it.
Yeah.
All over it. I need a lot of help. After pummeling Kevin in the Expert League, in the Redraft League, a couple weeks ago, I'm looking for help here. Kevin, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at Kevin So, and ask me about my number 4 ranked team in the Reddit League, who is currently edging out Tony's. But yeah, no, hit me up. Ask me questions.
So it's going to be like that. Okay. All right. No, I guess I started it.
But no, this is a lot of fun, guys.
Fun as always. We hope it was fun for you listeners who made it all the way to the end of this podcast. If you did, tweet us. Let us know that you made it. We appreciate it. We appreciate you listening. And see you next week. We appreciate it.